Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that you can follow Chat Cemetery on Instagram and Twitter at Chat Cemetery. There are links to those in the show notes. You can also support the show on Patreon, where I will be releasing bonus content for this show and my other podcast, Welcome to Geekdom. You can support for as little as a dollar a month to get access to all of that content. You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Both are extremely helpful for the show. And now let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined once again by Terry Menard, and we are talking Mr. Mercedes Season 3. Terry, this is a little more fresh for you than it is for me, because I binged the whole thing all at once, even though the episodes were spread out. And, you know, we're going to talk about Season 3, and then since you did all three episodes with me, and thank you for that, we'll talk a little about the series overall, if you don't mind. But how are you doing today?
You know, I'm here. I got my coffee, and I'm ready to let Lou free.
Yeah. So real quick, I do want to talk about the new cast members first, because I think we talked about this before, and they skip around. They don't go in the order of the books for the season. So here we're jumping back to Finders Keepers. So this is the story that technically in the books took place while Brady was in a coma. And you don't get a whole lot of Brady other than Bill visiting him in the hospital during that book. And, you know, they switched things up for reasons we discussed in our last episode. And I think that made sense. And it kind of gave a little bit of a different feel to the way they told the story in season three. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, we'll probably talk about this when we're talking about the series as a whole, but honestly, I think this probably was for the better.
Yeah. And obviously one of the big additions for this season is Kate Mulgrew, who has been in so many things. She's fantastic. I really enjoyed her in Orange is the New Black. She's been in a whole lot of other things aside from that. But we also get like 10 minutes of Bruce Dern in this season.
Right? He's playing Rothstein, the writer of the books that, of course, caused this entire season to, well, half of the season. We'll touch on that in a bit. But they kind of like spiral out of the, I would honestly say, secondary plot of this season.
Yeah.
Whereas like in the book, it's the main thrust of it. But he is, of course, the titular writer. And it was weird to see him pop up as sort of like a ghost throughout it, or like inside Bill Hodges' mind. Yeah. This season does a lot more to kind of ingrain Bill Hodges with the story a lot more than Finders Keepers did, where he doesn't really show up till about like halfway through the book, it felt like. So they do a really different job of trying to bring him in the beginning. And of course, he's a fan of Rothstein. And so, yeah, we see Rothstein a bit more through this than I was actually expecting.
Yeah. And the other main addition for this season is Gabriel Ebert as Morris Bellamy, who is, you know, sort of one of our main protagonists this season. And I think this season was, again, well cast, because you have Morris and Alma's relationship that is wild, to say the least. I'm sure we'll get into that more in a little bit. But then you have Meg Steedle coming in as Morris's girlfriend too, and she just gives like a nice bolstering performance to really get across what his character is like. And, you know, she isn't a weak character by any means, but she is kind of mostly used, unfortunately, to forward Morris's storyline.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, she gets the axe to the head pretty early on, and then she just sort of like the ticking time bomb. Literally a woman in a fridge, let's be honest. She's literally put in a fridge for most of the early episodes, until she is unceremoniously tossed into a wood chipper by Alma. And I liked her. I wish she was in a little bit more. I thought she provided an interesting dynamic, but unfortunately, she was literally fridged.
Yeah, and you have Peter Sobers, who is played by Ramian Newton. I apologize if I am butchering these names. And then you have, you know, Andrew, the bookkeeper, played by Patch Darrah.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure on that one, but we'll run with it. And even though these aren't like huge names necessarily, aside from, you know, like Kate Mulgrew and Brett Gallman coming back some more in this season, and the main cast, of course, and Bruce Dern, obviously, huge name, but again, very small part in comparison to everyone else I just named. And the book really focuses a lot on Peter. So let's kind of dive into some of the story and some things that have changed from the book, because everything I saw in this season made it seem like Peter never had a sister, which is a big change from the book. I would argue that's one of the biggest changes from the book, because that really determines how Peter handles things in the book. Because in the book, and spoilers at this point for anyone who hasn't either read the book or seen the show, but in the book, Morris takes his sister. And it's like this very, very intense moment, and it's very treacherous for Peter because they're kind of in this older building that people haven't been in for a while, and his dad's getting into real estate and selling things. And they keep some of that here. Like, he goes and hides out in like the old kind of nightclub or something. And I feel like without Peter having a sister, the impact just wasn't there as much.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, they tried to replace her with his mom, of course. But I mean, I don't know. Kids in Danger always add another element of suspense to it. And I think with the mom attached to it, it kind of lost its little bit of tension, I would say. Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely that kind of interesting dynamic that I believe is probably lost in this, because of the fact that all we see of the Saubers family is the dad, who is a complete jerk to the son. Obviously, you know, he was wounded when Mr. Mercedes came through. He's walking around with a cane. He's had a rough time. But all we see of that family is just strife and anger between the mom threatening to divorce the dad over the dad's treatment of the kid. And so there really is, it's just a painful area, and we don't really get to have any other dynamics in there. It's very one note. And so I would say that of the changes in this, that is probably the one that didn't work for me at all.
I think for me, what was most interesting about this was everything with Morris and Alma, and then Morris going after Peter was still interesting. And the bookshop owner, Andrew, you know, I think they did enough with him to kind of try and hide some of those other flaws, you know?
Yeah.
So what did you think of Andrew? Because I know when I did the book episode, I talked about this a little, about, you know, how they make use of that character, and not in a particularly great way. But what did you think of him in this?
Yeah, I mean, I could have done without the sort of the way that Alma at the very end kind of blamed this on him. I guess we find out like in a kind of shocking little moment. I mean, it's not even shocking. It's not even played for shock. It's just a little eh. But the fact that he was a pedophile, that we add that in there. And of course, as we discussed back when we were talking about the book version of this, there is that kind of stereotype of sort of the gay man being a predator. And here we don't necessarily, it never says who he's a pedophile. You know, if he is queer, we don't know that. But it just, there's that element to it that I don't think was really necessary at the very end of it, honestly. But other than that, I thought his character was more interesting in this, because you could kind of see that he's, you know, he fences stolen books, and so you have that element of it. And that's kind of all we really need to see from him. He's, you know, he's a friend of Morris from a time before, and now he's seeing dollar bills, and it worked for me.
Yeah, I think the reveal, like you said, was you know, it was what it was, and it didn't really hit you the way I thought it was going to when they do that reveal. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with this show, you know, Stephen King stuff is just very hard to adapt in general. And I think we talked about this a lot with season 2 and how much we saw Brady inside his head and, you know, him doing sit-ups and push-ups and whatever. And, you know, how many times right, we saw his chapped lips in the hospital. But this at least had a lot more movement to it. So I think it was easier to kind of just move past some of the flaws because you're like, okay, we're already on to the next thing. So you didn't have too much time to think about it really. And, you know, it does change up Morris's story a little bit because, well, not a little bit, a lot. And, you know, we should talk about that because in the book, he goes to jail for, what is it, like 30 years or something? And he's like in his 60s when he gets out. And, you know, for him, he's like, hey, I buried this stuff. I need to go find it. And that's how he links back up with Andrew and how he finds out about Peter. But in this, him and his buddy go kill Rothstein, and Rothstein kills the friend, and Morris gets away, gets in a car wreck, the stuff is left in the car, and he hasn't lost all of that time. So I feel like in that sense, it gives you more of a rush almost because everything's happening so fast, and in the moment, he hasn't had 30 years to plan everything out, which makes him sloppy.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, well, there's two things I want to touch on. One is the fact that, in my opinion, and this is just me, I think that the best Stephen King adaptations are not when they go literal with his books, because so much of what makes King interesting is that sort of inner character dialogue that is very hard to capture on screen. And we saw that again in season two, where we spent so much time in Brady's head in his coma that it just sort of slowed the plot down to a crawl. And so I think a lot of times, in order to correctly adapt King, you have to understand what the themes are, you have to understand what he's trying to explore. But then if you deviate from that to make it more cinematic or to make it more fit for the medium that you're working with, I think it works better. And so, yes, when we're talking about Morris, the fact that this is a younger guy, the fact that this is happening immediately, the fact that we are following him as he is sort of trying to Forrest Gump his way to get these books, it works so much better than spending a good portion of the time of about following his, you know, 30 years incarcerated and all of the assaults and the horribleness that happened to him, and then him finally getting out. There is a more immediate need to this story than I think the book had. And I think for the medium of television, I think it works a lot better than that. Because I was seriously wondering, it's like, how are they going to film this if they were going to do a literal adaptation of this book? It's like, are they going to do a lot of flashbacks? Are they going to... And it's just, I don't think it would have worked. So the fact that they grounded it here in the now and made everything just sort of happening as it's happening, I think worked a lot better.
Would you say this season was possibly the fastest paced of the three?
Listen, I'll tell you, binge watching the previous two seasons sometimes was a little bit of a chore. This one I was all the way in on. This one I think is paced a lot better. I think towards the end it sort of gets a little muddled. I probably think they probably could have done it in 8 or 9 episodes instead of 10. But in terms of that getting you hooked onto the story and being immediate, I loved this one a whole lot more because the pacing felt a bit more propulsive.
I also looked forward to any time Alma was going to be on screen just because, you know, Kate Mulgrew does such a fantastic job with that character, and you don't like her by any means, but she is just so...
Yeah.
I don't even know what the word is.
She's camp.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely campy. And I think when you have this kind of production quality and go camp, it can be hit or miss because, you know, when horror fans think of campy movies, you probably think of something, in Stephen King terms at least, more along the lines of Maximum Overdrive and, you know, some of those lower budget movies from back in like the 80s and 90s. And, you know, this obviously had a decent budget, great cast. And, you know, it's funny, we've gone this long without even talking about like Bill and Holly and Jerome. And I know you want to talk about Lou because we have some fun things to talk about there, but this story just kept things moving, and I really appreciated that with this season. But to sort of talk a little more about our previous characters now, Lou is on trial. You have this wild judge.
Okay, we got to talk about this judge really fast.
Yes, yes, please.
You know, he's played by Glenn Turman. And I'll tell you, Glenn was just chewing that scenery. This judge was wild. I was like, I wonder how much we're going to see of him this season. Because when we first started, I wasn't sure if Lou's story was going to be more of a plot B or if it was going to be the plot A. And this, it definitely is the plot A for me in this. It's definitely the emotional center of the story. So we get to see a lot more of him. But man, he knows that this is his moment to shine, and he is taking that spotlight, and he is just giving the character Judge Reigns all that he can. I was laughing so much at the way that he was just like, no, this, you guys are not making me happy. This is not satisfying. I loved his character.
He was like, I'm the judge. This is how I want things to go. Can you all just agree on something, please? Because for him, it was almost to the point where if it went to trial, there was no winning for him.
Yeah, well, he says that the way that the prosecution and the defense are acting, that they're making him, let him be the chump who convicts the killer or lets them free. And he's like, that's not good for me. You know, one of the things that kind of has been a continuing part, at least in the last two seasons, is people using Brady Hartsfield to further their career. And again, unfortunately, even though I like the character, Judge Reigns is doing that as well, because he wants to be up for re-election. He wants to get that populist vote. So there is that push and pull in his character. And then you also have the lawyers that want to make a name for themselves and all the people that are hangers-on of this immense tragedy. And I guess if now that I'm thinking about it, if I had one critique of the series as a whole, is that I don't think it really interrogates that notion of powerful people taking advantage of a horrible crime, because that gets introduced a lot through this, but it's never fully explored. But Judge's character, I don't know. Did you like him? I thought he was a trip.
I thought he was so entertaining, and it made it like way more entertaining than it had any right to be, almost, because it's a very serious thing. You know, Lou did commit a crime. No one's arguing that. It's more of an argument of, was she justified in this crime, despite not being threatened in that moment? And, you know, he's like, look, if I convict Lou, I'm not going to get reelected because people think Lou's a hero. And he's like, but if I go by the law, I have to convict her. And it's really this situation where I think everyone is in agreement that what she did is a crime. I don't think there's any arguing that she did it in a courtroom full of people. There's no, you know, there's no way around that. And it took planning, because she had to print a 3D printed gun.
Right.
So you're like, yeah, but we still like Lou way more than we liked Brady. And she was suffering in her own way because of what Brady did, and she didn't want to believe it. So, you know, that whole thing, it just added so much to the season, because if this had strictly just been, here's the Morris Bellamy story, I think it needed that extra storyline. You know, like you said, for you, it was a plot A, basically. And I feel like they were pretty even in my eyes, just because, well, two murders, two very serious things happen here. And they were both equally paced to where I really liked how they kind of propelled the season forward.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just that was the emotional underpinning of this season for me was Lou's journey. And I also think that in terms of the plot development, it was probably the more enthralling part for me to watch, because, I mean, you know, David E. Kelley created this series, and, you know, he's kind of cut his teeth on lawyer shows and that type of aspect. So, like, the fact that we spent so much time on Lou's trial, for me, whenever we were watching that, I was enthralled. Whenever we were watching the Morris stuff, I was like, okay, this is okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think talking more about Bill and Holly now, too, they really wanted to help Lou out, you know. They gave Lou a job. They kind of, you know, let Lou get back on her feet. And I really liked that, because they are the only other people who really understood what she went through, because they didn't interact with Brady in the same way, but they still interacted with Brady a lot. You know, Holly beat the crap out of Brady. And, you know, they all had their individual moments with him that I think made them understand on a level that not everyone else would. And for me, I liked how that played out. And then Lou was like, okay, it's time. I'm ready. I'm going to go do my thing. And they let her go, basically. So I think that was a really nice moment for her character. Did you feel like they did her character justice in the end?
Lou? Yeah. I mean, yes. I guess one of the aspects of this that I'm not too keen on is the way that they've handled sort of mental health in this season, because we have three characters that are struggling. We see Bill Hodges is having nightmares, and he is struggling with he breaks down and bawls in his car at one point. So he is obviously not in a good mental health area. We have Holly, who doesn't want to go to the institution that Lou is locked up in because she has her own sort of history with institutions, and as well as struggling with her own mental health. At one point, she has a panic attack and she's, you know, reduced to rocking on the floor. And then for the rest of the season, Jerome is staring at her as if he's afraid that she's going to commit suicide. And then we have Lou, who is struggling with, you know, the events, the trauma, the fact that she could be locked away, her own mental health issues, the fact that she is seeing and hearing Brady in her mind. So that aspect of it, I don't feel it was fully met. I don't think they introduced stuff, and I don't think they necessarily tied it off very well in a good way personally. And I was left feeling a little confused as to whether we're to take it that Brady has sort of lingered because of the drugs and the situation in season two, and if he actually is in her brain, or if she is just kind of damaged. And that's an unfortunate way to leave her character, in my opinion. I understand what they're going for, particularly in the last image that we see of Lou, where she is, you know, assumed Brady's old job and she is handing out ice cream. But right before that, she's talking about how her therapist is saying that she needs to get away from scenes that are reminding her of it. So the way it ended for me this season felt like the way it ended for her last season for me, where I was like, I really need to have another season to see how this is going to play out, because you're not giving any kind of sense of closure.
We just need a season of Lou. That's the solution.
You know, I'm here for it. I love that. I love the actress, and I really like that character. I think she was of the characters that were sort of, you know, buffed up in this series over the books that I read. Because I have not read the book that season two was based on, but I've read the other two. And her character in this is more interesting than she ever was in that book. And for me, between that and the actress, who I adore, Breida Wool, I want more. Yeah, so give me another season of hers.
Yeah, I have a question for you regarding Bill and Jerome's relationship, because Bill really harps on Jerome for leaving Harvard and not going back. And it's hard to tell sometimes if he's doing it because he cares about Jerome and wants Jerome to be better than he is, or if he just thinks Jerome is like wasting his time with him, because we know for a fact that Jerome has learned a lot by working with Bill and Holly, and he's been extremely useful. You know, it's not like he was just a side character. He had a purpose the entire time. He's, you know, sort of the tech nerd for them, and he wasn't ever at any point a disposable character. So for me, at least, it felt like Bill was trying to push Jerome because maybe he felt like he didn't push his daughter enough.
Yeah, and there's a moment towards the back half of the season where Bill has that realization where, you know, he is sort of acting as if Holly and Jerome are his kids. And you kind of get that dynamic a bit where, you know, Allie, his daughter, does come back for the last few episodes of this. And you kind of get the idea that, you know, he's making up for kind of not being the dad that he should have been to Allie. But unfortunately, I will say, this character dynamic between the three of them, I really wish they had spent a little bit more time fleshing out, because as much as Jerome is useful in the story and he provides a lot of the kind of plot points that moves the case forward, we don't really get to see much about him. I mean, is he going back to Harvard? He tells the librarian, you know, that he's taking his semester off, but is that a lie to her at one point just to get this stuff? What is he going to do after this? Is he going to stick with them? Is he going to pursue Harvard? There's a lot of these little dangling character tropes or threads that I feel that the season kind of introduces, but then doesn't have enough time to adequately explore.
I think that's stuff they could have taken time out of season two to do, honestly. Because
we had to have him doing push-ups, though.
Yeah. And I know we're, you know, talking about a lot of things we didn't love, but I think it's because overall, I think it's safe to say we both did like quite a few aspects of this show. You know, you mentioned how much you love Lou's character, and I think there were a lot of things they did right. You know, Bill's mannerisms and everything, Holly's mannerisms, and Jerome being different from them, but not in a way that makes him an outsider, really. You know, it's not like they are harping on, hey, he's the black kid, in case you forgot.
Right.
And I really liked that. With Jerome, you know, he dresses different. He sometimes talks a little different than everyone else. And it's not a big deal. It's just who he is. And I really love that's how they handled his character.
Yes. I have been kind of talking about some of the negative aspects of the show, but, and that's the sort of critic in me that I had to pick out these little aspects of it. But I did really enjoy this season. I do think that one of the things that season three does really well is humanizes the characters a lot more than the previous two seasons did. You know, we have, I mentioned Hodges breaking down in the car. We have that moment of, he's a character, and they kind of do a good job of tying this into the Rothstein plot. Hodges is a character that has been gruff his entire life, and he has been, you know, sort of that prototypical hypermasculine detective that we have seen in all these cases. And here, as he's being confronted with the fact that he has read Rothstein's book, Morris has read Rothstein's book, the fact that he has idolized this man, and now realizing that maybe his literature has kind of poisoned young adults, where it kind of pulls into the disaffected sort of rage that straight white men have in as a young teenager that they have no outlet for. And so they read this, and then they sort of almost in a way kind of get pulled into this kind of cult of rage and being that kind of gruff Jimmy Gold character that Rothstein wrote. So we have Hodges sort of dealing with that after so many years of, you know, being that character and realizing, oh shit, this guy that I was idolizing, maybe he wasn't the greatest. And maybe my anger issues have to do with the fact that I thought that this was the way to act. So you have that. You have Holly kind of taking tentative steps forward to romance and sort of being her own person. You have Lou's journey as a woman who murdered a man but did it for noble reasons. And then you also have, she gives that eulogy to Brady at the court where she's like, you know, he wasn't all bad. There was evilness in him, and he became a monster, but there were moments of him that were incredibly human and incredibly kind. And so that is one thing that I really think this season does a really good job of.
Yeah, and because they aren't doing a deep dive into Morris in the same way that they did with Brady, everything, like we said earlier, moves faster. And I don't think we need as deep of a dive with Morris, because with Brady, a lot of it was psychological and sort of this slow burn with his character in general. But Morris, yes, there's a psychological aspect to it, but Alma's really the one pulling the strings and sort of pushing him in these directions that she wants him to go for her benefit, because she had this past relationship with Rothstein. And we find out that Ida did too, and we were like, oh, okay. And, you know, we got a little less of Ida this season too. And I think, you know, Alma took a lot of that screen time, if you will, simply because her character was at the forefront of the story in a way that we didn't really need as much of Ida's character, because when we were spending time with Brady, it was very possible she could be in danger. Whereas now it's like, this doesn't really have anything to do with her, but we do see her with Peter. So there's still a connection to the case, because she's teaching and Peter is one of her students and she knows something is up with him. And I like that she's able to still give helpful insight into the case, even though, you know, it's maybe a little less tempered than in previous seasons with the urgency.
Well, and she also has that realization that not only did she hand the book over to, or did, you know, did she get involved with Peter, but she also handed over the book to Morris when he was a kid. So you have her kind of guilt over this idea that maybe she is kind of culpable in it. And again, because she's not in this as much as I personally would have liked, because I love her. I think she adds such a good dimension to the series. Because of that, we do see her kind of dealing with that culpability, where she's like, there's that moment where she's trying to talk Morris off the ledge on the phone. and she's unable to get to him. And she just sort of sits there going, oh, geez, how much of this is my fault? And so you kind of see all of these little pieces sort of coming together about how Morris got to be the way that he is today.
Yeah. And they use Ida very well in that mm-hmm. regard, because every scene she's in has a significance to the case, really. And, you know, there's a lot less of the small talk between her and Bill that we get in, especially the first season with them being neighbors. And obviously they're still neighbors, but, you know, they aren't getting to know each other anymore at this point. So there's less of the awkward hellos and, you know, borrowing of the car and all that stuff, which was still great, you know, for both of their character development over the three seasons. But I feel like with season three, they really sort of ramped things up and you're like, why couldn't you have started this in season two? You know, you didn't have to make all of season two necessarily the Brady story still. And because this isn't like a direct one-to-one adaptation, I felt like they could have played with that a little more, where maybe this case had started towards the end of season two and you kind of were left hanging. And then obviously we could binge it, so we wouldn't have been left hanging quite as much. But I think there's something that could have been done maybe to give us a little more of this story and a little less of Brady in the hospital in season two and that stuff. And it still would have told the same story, just in, you know, a slightly different way. But Terry, you watched this a little more recently than I did, and I don't have too much more to say about it. So are there any particular moments you want to discuss from season three?
One of the things that I did want to talk about was, one of the things I really liked about Finders Keepers, the book that this is based on, was Rothstein's book. We see this the dynamic between Peter and Morris, where Peter is now reading Rothstein's work and is falling in love with it, but he's doing things for the good of his family and trying to look out for people. Whereas Morris saw the character and only kind of gravitated to the more evil side of things, or the more, you know, selfish side of aspects. So the book does a really good job of contrasting these two people that took two very different things from Rothstein's novel. And I think that kind of in King's mind was exploring the way that writing can both be a positive thing and a negative thing. And we can see that people can take completely different aspects from a book based on their life experience. And that's one thing I do think that the series, the season, did not do as well as the book, if I'm being honest, because Rothstein's work in here has been a negative effect. And I kind of talked about this a little bit with Bill Hodges, where, you know, he's seeing that sort of rage. And so we have that. We have the fact that the moment that Peter gets wrapped up in this, he kind of becomes a little jerk. He's like all of a sudden lashing out. He's becoming kind of turning into the same kind of person almost that you could almost see Morris be in a few years, you know, that Peter could become Morris in a few years. And then you also see Morris. And so there's that moment where Hodges hands the book over to Jerome, and Jerome reads it, and he doesn't like the book. And he tells Hodges, he's like, I liked it. I liked Jimmy Gold, but there was too much anger that just oozes out of the book. And he's like, reading this book breeds melancholy into teenage boys. It's like swallowing a bad drug. And he's like, after I read The Runner, I couldn't help but think of you, your anger. Maybe this book cultivated some of it. So here we have a more didactic look at this book and about Rothstein's career than what we had in Finders Keepers, to the point that I kind of thought that a little bit of that sort of nuance was missing a little bit in terms of what Stephen King was trying to say about authorship in his book. And I, you know, part of that is because we're streamlining it. We're focusing on a 10-episode television series that has to tell all these different disparate plot points and plot aspects. But I don't know. That was one thing that I was a little disappointed in.
Yeah. And I really only have a couple other things I want to mention, too. And they kind of go hand in hand, because I do want to give a shout out to the gore effects again in this one. You know, like when Andrew's fingers get chopped off. And
oh, yeah,
we didn't talk about the big death in this season, which is when Morris kills Alma. And that is a big moment for his character, and another great gore effect too, because he is finally getting rid of this influence that she's had over him since he was,
yeah,
what did they say, like 14 or something when their relationship first began. Like, this was not a healthy thing by any means. And, you know, we talked about his girlfriend's death and her getting shoved in a fridge because she walks in on him and Alma and she's like, seriously, this is what you've been doing, this mm-hmm. old lady, you know. And, you know, I think Alma's death was just a momentous occasion for Morris in a way, even though as viewers, we probably didn't care about it quite as much because we already didn't like either of those characters in particular.
Yeah, but I will say that Kate, I mean, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but Kate brings so much, such a dynamic to the character of Alma. I mentioned earlier that she's kind of camp. And what I mean by that in particular with her character is that Kate is acting as if she's in a completely different series than was happening on screen. And that is what gives it that sort of dynamicism and that sort of camp aspect of it. Because when she is singing "Don't Rain on My Parade" while slicing up poor Danielle and then foisting her into the wood chipper, or her outfits that are just a little bit over the top, or when she is digging the bullet out of Morris's leg, singing Liza Minnelli, and then sucking the liquid goo out of his leg and spitting it. Like, these are things that in a more grounded show just are like, what is even happening right here? But she adds that kind of element to it that at first I was like, this is a little silly. But by the end of it, I was like, she just is going to town almost as much as the character that's playing the judge.
Yep.
Just sort of like chewing the scenery, having a good time. And it adds that sort of almost unhinged quality to her character that it just, I don't know, it elevates the material more than I was actually expecting when I first saw her character.
Even the judge feels unhinged at times because mm-hmm. you see his eyes get big and you're like, oh boy, I would not want this judge, you know?
No.
And I think they both just brought that levity to the show too, because without those two characters, this would have felt a bit more dire if they didn't play those characters the way they did. And after having two seasons of Brady Hartsfield, we needed something a little bit lighter. And, you know, this guy being obsessed with books of all things, you know, was definitely a bit of a different kind of story. And I really like that about this. But so let's talk about the show overall for a few minutes here. We talked about sort of our nitpicks, if you will, and we did like this, you know.
I think
that's safe to say. And I know we didn't do ratings for season by season, so I kind of wanted to just give some overall thoughts real quick here. And for me, overall, I did still really enjoy this because I think everyone they cast played their characters so perfectly. Like, I can't think of one of the actors who didn't play their character exactly the way I was wanting them to play the character, basically.
Yeah, you know, this is a show that has immense talent both behind and in front of the screen. I mean, it's a David E. Kelley production who's, you know, done a lot of television, understands the ins and outs of television. You have Jack Bender directing some episodes, and Jack Bender did episodes of Lost and Alias and Game of Thrones, so he knows his way around how to direct stuff. So you have that aspect of it. And then in front of the screen, yes, there is so much talent. Every single character, every single actor in this is giving their A game. And it's nice to see, because this wasn't a show that I don't think was seen by a whole lot of people, because it was on a network that you had to have DirecTV, I believed it, to watch, because it was on Audience for the longest time. And so for me, I never was able to actually watch the show. So you have all of these people that are coming together and creating a fantastic show that, even though they're probably were stretching the budget a bit, you can't really tell. If we're looking at the season as a whole, I think this is a really well done series. I think the second season is probably my least favorite, just because I think all the stuff went inside Brady's head does not work on screen. And I was initially confused why they would, other than the fact that, you know, they had the actor to play Brady and they needed to keep, you know, film it, because obviously to try to get someone to come back for another season might be kind of problematic. So you have it, let's do it right now. I get that. But I was a little concerned about flip-flopping the story. But seeing season 3, I think they really did a really good job of tying all of the themes that the show has been wanting to explore, I think they tied it together. They brought everything back to the fact that all of this started with Mr. Mercedes. Everything is all because of Mr. Mercedes. That Morris went on his spree, that the Saubers are having problems, that Lou is having problems, that Hodges is having, all of it is tied to that moment. And I think overall that is one thing that the show has done really a great job on.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't get super deep on these seasons because, one, that's kind of not how I've formatted this show. So I really want to encourage anyone, if you've listened to all three episodes, to still go and watch it, because I believe it's available on Peacock now. You can buy Blu-ray, DVD copies, whichever you prefer. So it is more readily available now than it was when it was actually airing. And I think that's great because we've seen a lot of things that don't do well when they either hit theaters or release on TV and then they go on to have this life after the fact. Like, if I remember correctly, Shawshank did not do that well in theaters, and it has since become like one of the greatest Stephen King adaptations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a long one, admittedly, so maybe that's why it didn't do so hot in theaters, but I think there are certain Stephen King adaptations that are definitely underrated, and I think this might be one of them simply because people haven't been able to watch it the same way that someone would watch something that's on like HBO, for instance, like,
right,
or even Hulu. I imagine things like The Outsider and Castle Rock and 11/22/63 were watched with higher numbers than this was, because like you said, you either had to have DirecTV or whatever the AT&T service was, which I think was called UVerse. So you had to have one of those two to get that channel. And then you had to also have, you know, the knowledge that that channel even existed.
Right.
So now that it's more readily available, I hope more people are going to watch it. But Terry, if you had to give a rating overall for this, you know, I think I'm in the 3.5 out of 5 range right now because there were some flaws that we've talked about. But for you, what would you give this?
You know, honestly, if I were to look at it as a whole, I probably would be about 3.5. I honestly think that season 3 is probably etching a little bit closer to a 4. I really, of all the seasons, because I again had to binge it for recording, so of all the seasons, this was the one that I actually had a lot of joy in watching. And part of it might be because I didn't know where the story was going to go with Lou's aspect of it. But I think that it does a much better job of kind of exploring the themes that Mr. Mercedes is about, the series and the books are about, more so than the previous two. So I think this season, if I were to look at it as just this one, it's probably itching more to a 4. But I think overall, yeah, 3.5 is probably an accurate rating for me too.
Yeah, because I would say like season 1 and season 3 are kind of neck and neck because mm-hmm. I think season 1 did a great job setting up all of these characters and, you know, giving them character development that worked really well. And then you kind of have a dip for season 2. I'd probably put season 2 at like a 2.5 maybe. So it's kind of like 4, 2.5, 4 roughly. So, you know, kind of evening out to a 3.5 there overall for me. And I would watch a 4th season. I know there's been a lot of talk about whether or not there is going to be a 4th season, and I don't think there are plans for it at the moment, but if I'm not mistaken, I think they had like material ready or something like that for a 4th season. Maybe I'm getting confused with another show because there have been a lot of Stephen King shows lately, but I think a lot of people who did watch this were kind of hoping for a season 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, hopefully with it being on Peacock, maybe it'll get a little bit bigger of an audience, because I definitely think that there is plot thread set up here that could continue on to a season 4. I'd really like to see what they would do with that personally, because I like these actors and I like these characters. And I think the thing that this season did really well, as I mentioned, is humanize them to the point that I do want to see what's going to happen next, because we don't get a lot of closure by the end of this. So yes, please watch the show. Let's try to get, I would love to see a season 4.
Yeah. And one quick note before we go, another big change from the book is that Bill is not sick.
Yeah.
So a season 4 could do that and sort of fill in some of the blanks between End of Watch and, you know, the outsider for Holly's character or something like that. So there's lots of different directions they could go with it. And I would obviously definitely be watching if they do a season four.
I would too.
Awesome. Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining me, not only for this episode, but for all three episodes. And you did the Finders Keepers book. We're in a big Bill Hodges mood over here. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's always a fun time.